First of all, let's start with a congratulations to Mr. Anthony Risk, because he just coached a Olympic performer who just won a gold medal in the qualifications to qualify for the next Olympics. And so, you know, congratulations for that. I got to watch him coach her while I was in Lebanon, and kind of led me to thinking about what I was going to talk about today, which is peak performance. You know, what's the difference? I mean, people always talk about peak performance, wanting to be a peak performer, whether it's, you know, sports, performing arts, acting, singing, dancing, even training, whatever it is. So what's the difference between a peak performer and others? And again, this is Facebook Live. If you like this, click like and share, pass it around. If you don't like it, keep it to yourself. I'm also recording it on Zoom so I can do a couple other things with it. And Mr. Anthony, Ms. Carolyn East from beautiful Oregon gives you a big congratulations. So again, that is so cool that one of our elite coaches, a master trainer, gold master trainer, you know, got to go into the qualification rounds for the Olympics and coach someone who's going to, I think it's Tokyo this next time. So that's going to be wonderful. And so today, what I thought we'd talk about is a little bit of peak performance. You know what, you know, we always talk about peak performance. And one of the things we got to remember as we start getting ready to do this, I know in my case, you know, if I'm coaching somebody on performance issues, you know, and they want to be a peak performer, first of all, you have to realize one of the problems, I think, and I talked to Anthony about this, of course, he was dealing with an Olympic level person, is everyone's idea of peak is much different depending on where they're aimed. There's Mr. Richard McDonald, my friend from Venice, who I think was out in Seattle for a while. But, you know, that's one of the things we have to realize. One of the problems people have when they want to up their game to the next level is if they're at this level, they're trying to model this level. And I'll use speaking as an example. Someone becomes a trainer. Just talking to the wonderful Miss Erica Flint yesterday. You know, we did the spotlight on Erica Flint yesterday, and that'll be in the next e-zine. If you're not on my email list, make sure you do. But you know, we talked about many things, and peak performance is one of her things. Personally, you know, she does all these like extreme kind of sports, it looks like. And but we were talking a little bit about it, but Anthony and I were talking about while I was in Lebanon. And one of the issues, again, let's say someone wants to be a trainer, going back to that, and they want to be an elite performer. So they look at a Anthony Robbins, right? Or Brandon Bouchard, somebody like that who's up here. And okay, you're getting started, you're down here. Well, from here to here is a hell of a leap. I mean, even if you're just naturally gifted as a speaker and as a with the vocal training and everything, if you got all of these things, still that is a hell of a jump, right? So first of all, you got to realize one of the things that, you know, you got, and it's hard to coach people on this, especially if they're around the hypnosis and NLP world, they want to make these exponential jumps because of some of the myths about NLP and hypnosis that it, you know, I always say it's not magical, but it's not magic, but it appears magical. You can help people be better. You can help people get to the next level. But, you know, I always throw in, there's a few little reality checks. If you're here and you want to get here, there are steps along the way, right? And also, when you see this finished product of an elite performer, you know, like, you know, Anthony Robbins for speaking, he makes it look easy. That's one of the tricks of an elite performer. They make it look easy, and they make you think you can do this very easily yourself, right? And again, a couple weeks ago, when I was a week and a half ago, it wasn't that long ago now. But when I was in Lebanon, I got to go watch her practice, the elite, skeet shooter. And I don't know anything about skeet shooting, so but I'm watching, and it, you know, she made it look very easy, right? And it's like, interesting. And I knew it was hard because, you know, I'm very familiar with weapons, and you know, shooting well is a much different skill than thinking you can shoot well. But then a couple other people showed up, and one guy was very good. Well, he was a professional shooter, so he made it look easy. And then another man showed up who was, I think, a hobbyist. I don't know if he shot tournaments or not, but you could see the difference, right? But again, from where, you know, the Olympic and the professional, and then where this guy was, you know, there's steps you got to take. And one of the things you got to realize to get to the peak performance level, you got to be willing to do what the peak performers do. What are some of the things peak performers do? I call it drive, desire, and discipline. They have all three of those, right? Many people have the desire. I want to be a Tony Robbins. I want to be, you know, a bodybuilder. I want whatever it is. I have the desire, right? Do they have the drive and the discipline? That's the missing ingredients, right? When you look at the ones that get to this level, they have the desire. They want to be an elite performer. But do they have the drive and the discipline to do the things you need to do, right? I know in a field I'm very familiar with, in the performing arts field, they always say you could tell someone that's really going to the next level by the type of classes they take, how often they take classes, and all the other things they do around the performing, right? Let's say they're a stage performer, right? When they're not in a play, are they taking classes? Even when they're in a play, are they still taking classes? Are they taking voice lessons? Are they taking movement lessons in case they do a musical? Even if they don't do a musical, they're still probably taking voice lessons and movement so they look good on stage, you know, stage combat, all the things you have to do if you're, and same with the actor studying film. Are they taking a class? Are they working on their voice? Are they working on their look, whatever their look is, because their body's their instrument, you know? Are they doing those things? You know, when I started to get serious about acting a few years ago, one of the first things I did was I found a teacher that teaches professional actors, right? And I had to be interviewed to get in, you know? She has a very beginner's level class, you know, for people that are new. Well, you know, I had a lot of experience, you know, theater, and, you know, community theater, professional theater, all that, professionally trained, but it'd been a long time. But she interviewed me, and I, later on, after getting to talk to her, she was checking to see, did I have the drive and the discipline? I had the desire, but, you know, and after we got to know her, and I have another acting teacher I kind of use on the other coast of Florida, and she talks about everybody has the desire, like, to be a movie star, but do they have the drive and the discipline? Do they take the classes? Are they working on their auditions? You know, and are they willing, to do the little work? She tells a wonderful story, and this will tie into getting to the next level of to get to that next level, and you're down here. Well, to get up here, let's say you want to be a working actor, right? That's a big jump. You're doing this, you're doing that to get up here, right? You're just starting to become a speaker or a trainer, and you want to get up here. Well, there's steps, right? And many people just want to skip all the middle work and get to this work. Well, if you do, you may crash. That's what we see happen a lot, right? Somebody in the performing arts, they get a breakthrough role, and then they kind of self-destruct that they get it. To use a sports analogy, it's someone comes out of high school or, you know, 1 year of college, they jump into the pros, and they have skills, right? But they don't have the discipline side of it and the drive to study and to get better and to do this. And, you know, they're one-hit wonders. They disappear, whether, you know, whatever it is. And then, you know, so part of this, to get from here to here, there's all these steps, right? And but the acting teacher tells a story that she sent out an audition, and it was for one line in a film, right? Like a secretary kind of part, unnamed, no character name, secretary, right? And she was supposed to walk in, I think had one line, giving it to the lead, right? And so she sent out the audition. Nobody really wanted to audition. It's only one line, you know, half whatever it paid for the day. It was a professional shoot, so they paid for the day, even if it's one line. And nobody wanted to audition, so she sent it out again. And it's a good story. And then, so finally, she had one lady audition, right? And she gets the part. She was good. She was at help, but, you know, she was good, so she gets cast. Because she also didn't have time to send out another audition notice, right? Because, you know, this thing was starting in a day or two. So the lady showed up on the set for her one line. Well, the director liked her, right? The director and the showrunner liked her. And so they asked her, would she come back? And so she came back for another day, had another line. So it's more money, right? And then even on days she didn't, she ended up working every day of the film, right? Because the guy decided that whoever the lead was, I don't even know what the movie was, but whoever the lead was, his assistant would be with him like most of the time, unless it was something really personal, I guess. I don't know. But so this lady went from doing one line to basically being a co-star, a featured actor. She had several lines. The guy threw her some lines in there. The guy playing the lead, you know, was friendly with her. And she met some of the other people. And, you know, hey, business is all about who you know. And she was pleasant. She was professional. They gave her some extra lines. Lady also said that later on, even the one actor fed her some lines, so she'd have to say something back. You know, so she get, of course, the more lines you get, the more money you get. And so it went from one line to a featured role, right? Well, that's how you grow, right? And that's how you learn. And also she got that unbelievable experience of working in front of the camera, whether it's this camera or this camera, right? And again, when I started taking the acting classes myself, very comfortable on stage, you know, done 125 plus plays, you know, professional, a lot of community theater, some regional, of course, going back to college and all that, but professionally trained, very comfortable on stage, didn't know how to do camera, right? So I had to work on that. And so again, I know it's a step-by-step process. And again, for those of us in the hypnosis, the NLP world, you want to become an elite trainer, and you watch like a Tony Robbins or Brandon Burchard in front of a few thousand people, well, you got to realize they didn't start there, right? They didn't walk out with the huge audiences, right? Tony Robbins, I did that course, What Makes Tony Robbins Tony Robbins. You know, he was a salesperson for Jim Rohn. He would do very small, intimate seminars for Jim Rohn people, right? And would coach them up. And then he learned NLP and hypnosis, and he started adding that, and it grew and grew. And for a few years, he was doing smaller groups, you know. One of his old videos, he talked about the first time he broke 100 in a training thing he was doing. He was like ecstatic. He thought he hit that was it. There's no more growth, right? And, you know, of course, now he does, you know, his favorite program is Date with Destiny, and that usually has about 3,000 people in it, right? So, you know, but it's a step-by-step process, and you learn along the way. You know, I can coach you on how to be a good presenter. I can teach you staging. I can teach you the language patterns. I can teach you all that. But there's something to be said for just doing it, to getting in front of a group, to practicing it. You know, you can take acting classes, but there's something about working in front of a camera on a set or getting on a stage and doing the play. That is invaluable, right? That's where your training kicks in, right? Training is invaluable. Role playing is invaluable. And once you use it, and then once you get in the real world, it begins to go. So one of the things we have to really think about is the drive and the discipline. You know, the desire's there. People, if they show up and they want to improve their golf game, they have the desire. Do they really have the drive and the discipline? I remember the last golfer I worked with, and I don't play golf, it's not my thing. But the guy wanted to improve his golf game. So I'm like, great, we can do that. And as we started talking, one of the things I found out very early, he didn't really want to work at it. He thought he could just be hypnotized, take 10 strokes off his golf game and go. I said, well, we can probably hypnotize you, improve your golf game a little bit. But, you know, maybe we ought to work in little discipline, little desire, or, you know, with your desire, a little drive, right? To maybe go practice your drives, go practice your putts, even if it's just a few minutes a day. Right? I was blessed to work with some actors, and they had the desire, they wanted to be, you know, working actors, but, you know, they didn't want to take classes. They didn't want to study. They didn't want to, like, make the rounds, do the things you have to do. They wouldn't want to audition for anything unless it was a featured role. And so I'm like, well, you know, after one or two sessions, I said, I really can't help you. I don't know what to do at this level, right? So, but again, when you're lucky enough to, then I get blessed to get some actors that are like, they're working it, they're doing it, they're doing it. It's like the time I worked with the pro hockey players, and the guy had his big drive, he showed up for the coaching, And it was a backdoor kind of thing. I worked with an aunt, if I remember right, for weight loss. I met the guy, and all he wanted to do was stay in the majors for professional hockey, right? He was in like whatever their equivalent of AAA is, but, you know, and he would get called up and he'd play a little bit. He goes, all I want to do is get to that level and stay there for a season or two, right? And so we worked on it. And part of it, he was intuitive enough, and he also knew after we questioned it, his big failing was he didn't really practice as much as, you know, when he got it to the big leagues, and he was watching how hard these guys worked, right? That no one else sees. You know, some of the big name stars would be out on the ice early practicing, you know, on their day off, they would come in and work on, besides getting their massages and that, because it's a rough game, you know, they were working on the skill set. We always hear in professional football, you know, how the Tom Brady's and the Drew Brees and when Peyton Manning played and all that, you know, they're in the facility early watching film, getting ready for the next game, reviewing their last game to see what they did wrong and how they can improve it. Yeah. And not just the quarterbacks, but all of these people at that level. And I got to work with a guy that was when I lived up north and played for the Chicago Bears. And he talked about once he got into the NFL, he realized that the worst player on that team was better than 99% of the players in college, you know, coming out. And the ones that really stuck around were the ones that realized they had to do the homework, the practice. You know, they all had the desire and they got there, but the ones that stick around are the ones with the drive and the discipline. So maybe that's some of the things we have to look at. You know, and I know when I'm, you know, coaching speakers, if people want to be a speaker or a trainer, it's, you know, to take an improv class, to work on your presentation skills, to videotape yourself and then watch it objectively, you know, to get a coach to mentor you. You know, when you look at the elite actors, you know, they have acting coaches. You know, why would a guy like Robert De Niro take an acting class at the actor studio? Because he's good, but, you know, he wants some outside feedback. He wants some things like that, you know. And always, you always hear in the acting world that the best actors are the ones that take the direction the best. You know, they, and the really good directors want to work with those actors. There's a reason why they, hey, Kevin Hogan, how are you doing? So, you know, there's a reason why the good directors want to work with the good actors. They take directions, they take feedback, they try new things. You know, I was watching Robert Redford be interviewed about his directing. And that's what he said. The first thing he wants to know is, will the actor take the direction that he's given? You know, because, you know, he's the one that sees the film. Same with, you know, if you're coaching a speaker, you know, you can't see yourself from the audience viewpoint. You know, sometimes you need someone in the audience to say how it's working up on the stage. So, you know, so again, you know, and the going back to my friend Anthony Risk and his Olympic shooter, you know, he was telling me how much she trains, she runs, she does exercises, you know, eats good, does all the things. Does that have direct bearing on her shooter? Yes. You know, in fact, one of the things he had her do while she was practicing the day I was there is he had her stop and then run around, get her heart rate really up, and then shoot while her heart rate was up. You know, and I'm like, this reminds me of the military, right? You know, they would have you get your heart rate all crazy and then hand you your weapon to, you know, do some long distance firing in certain kinds of trainings, right? Because, or get you to run through your takedown scenario or your training scenario while your heart rate's up, because, you know, you could mentally say, oh yeah, I can imagine being in a stressful situation, kicking in a door or taking live fire, or this young lady could imagine, and she'd been there, you know, what it's like to be in the medal round of the Olympics, right? Well, one of the things is your heart rate. Well, you can artificially do that by running, getting your heart rate up, and then go and practice, right? And then getting that under control. So anyway, I just want to talk about, so the elite performers, to get that peak performance going, you know, it's not just the desire. People have the desire all the time. And all of us that do hypnosis and NLP know that. People have the desire to lose weight or stop smoking or again, improve their sports games, whatever it happens to be, but do they have the drive and the discipline? Sometimes what we have to do is help them with that level, right? You know, everybody's good at starting a diet. Very few people are good at changing their diet and keeping it changed. Everybody can stop smoking. Can you stay stopped? Stop drinking. Can you stay stopped? So, you know, that's the things we can take that kind of information into what we're doing next, including the peak performance. And I always stress to all the hypnosis and NLP people, it doesn't mean you have to be super familiar with the skill set that you're working with. Like in sports, you don't have to be a golfer to work with golfers. You don't have to be, because you're working on the mental side. You're working on, the thought process, the physiology, the beliefs, the things like that. And I'll close with a really cool story about peak performance. So that's one of the things that we can do. And, you know, and again, I've been blessed beyond my wildest dreams. I was just in Lebanon. And right before that, I got to go to beautiful Oregon and teach a class. And then a couple weeks before that, I was in Las Vegas. I mean, I've been blessed beyond my wildest dreams, you know. I'm getting busy again. I kind of pulled back, but I'm starting to do more again, you know. And so one of the things I'm excited about, and the reason I'm thinking peak performance, is in a few weeks, first part of December, December 7th, I think, Pearl Harbor Day, I'm teaching a hypnosis for actors in New York City, in the theater district in New York City, with the guy helping me put it on is a working agent, Albert Bramante from Emerging Talent. He's helping me put it on. And so we're going to work with, you know, the how can you use hypnosis for acting, right? And, you know, hypnosis to create a character, hypnosis, of course, for auditioning, hypnosis for confidence, hypnosis for, you know, gaining weight or losing weight for a role. That's something people, especially for film, they want people to muscle up or women to get all fit really quick. And then suddenly the next role, you may need to lose all that weight. You see, you know, we see it with the big name actors, but, you know, you see it with everyone. So I get to do, of course, hypnosis and NLP for memory, you know, so you can remember your lines. All the things that we do, you know. So I'm so excited about doing all this in New York. And one of the things we're going to do there is bring in the actors at the beginning, and they'll do an audition piece, whether it's a monologue or if they're doing a scene with somebody, great if both actors come. And we're going to watch them. That's your baseline. So get up, start, do it. Groom. Now we got it, right? I think we're filming it. And then at the end, after we go through the day of, it's all going to be doing it. I'm not going to teach them how to do the processes. We're going to walk them through the processes, you know, hypnosis for concentration, hypnosis for confidence, creating your character hypnotically. A couple other things that we're going to be doing, circle of excellence, all this stuff. So then, and then when they do the scene at the end of the day to see the exponential jump by doing the mental side of the work, right? And so that I'm very excited about doing that, right? And again, that's what we can help with. We can help with the mental side of it. One of the things that got NLP very famous was the shooting, and kind of relates to Anthony and his skeet shooter, was the shooting thing that they did with the U.S. Army in the late 1970s, early 1980-ish, 82, I think, somewhere in there. Well, what they did is NLP got known that we can help you get better at what you do very fast, very effective. And you can find this study. In fact, it's really laid out well in a book called Warrior's Edge, Strategies for the Corporate Battlefield by Colonel John Alexander. And he ran the mental training side of a thing called the Stargate program. But they were looking for mental edge in that. So they decided they were going to take pistol shooting, which is a skill that not everybody seems to be good at, or, you know, shooting a handgun. And they had all the documentation. It was a 5-day training. Most of the people, if I remember right, shot about 750 rounds of ammunition. Not everybody qualified, and very few shot expert, right? And then also, very importantly, the skills diminished quickly after the training. Great. So they had the base, right? So they brought in some people, and the only thing they needed for the group was basically no experience shooting a handgun, right? So they're basically blank slate. Well, so then when they went and they worked with three of the best shooters the Army had, it was two sergeants and a colonel, and they were on the pistol shooting team. That's what they did, travel all over the world, shooting, you know, Olympics and whatever that's in that world. These guys were good. And so first, of course, they tried to see what was the physical side, the breathing. They all had different rituals. They all had different things. The only thing physically they could all do was control their breathing very quickly, which also they knew, and they didn't test it at the time, but we could also figure that when you slow your breathing down, your heart rate slows. So then your hands get steadier, because if you're breathing fast, your heart rate's up, your hands are going to get, you know, micro movements, which isn't good for shooting a weapon. So that part we could model, the breathe deep, kind of imagine slowing your heart rate down, being very calm. But then they started asking about the idea of shooting. And what they found were some beliefs that were different than most people, that all of these elite shooters thought that shooting a handgun was natural and normal. It was an easy skill. It was a skill, once you learned it, it stayed with you. And one of them said it was like riding a bike. You might be a little rusty, but it's gonna come right back, right? So, okay, that's different. Again, natural, normal, easy, it stays with you. They also all kind of had the idea that they didn't shoot the gun. They released the bullet to go down range. They didn't shoot the weapon. They released the bullet to go down range. They all also kind of had the thought that, you know what, the bullet really wants to hit the target. The bullet was created just for this purpose. It wants to hit what I'm shooting at. And if I don't screw it up, the bullet's going to go there, right? And so then when they brought in the people to train, they spent, they started the training with, this course is impossible to fail. Most of you will shoot expert. The reason you'll all shoot expert is shooting a handgun is natural and easy. You know, and once you learn the skill, it's going to stay with you. It's like driving a car. It's like riding a bike. If you don't do it for a while, you can do it. It's a lot of fun, and you don't really worry about shooting the weapon. All you're doing is releasing the little bullet to go down range and hit the target. We're going to show you how to do that, right? And so they kept reinforcing that as they taught them the breathing pattern, right, and how to slow their heart rate down, right? And then they started shooting. Anyway, to fast forward, in a day and a half, between most of the people shot between 200 and 250 rounds of ammunition. So instead of 5 days, it was about a day and a half. Instead of 750 rounds, it's about 250 rounds. All of this, you know, time equals money, bullets equals money, and everybody qualified 75% shot expert. And then on a follow-up, a few months or a few weeks later, with no practice, they were all able to pick up where they stopped after a little bit of practice and get back to that level. Right. Well, the Army didn't really do anything with it, except they really became fascinated with the mental side of it. And where it seemed to get implicated, according to Colonel John Alexander, is in the elite performance branches of the military, the SEALs, the Rangers, the recon, Marine recon, parajumpers, all these guys. They work on the mental aspect. And that's what we can do as hypnotists. We can model the elite trainers. We can model the elite speakers, if that's what you're working with. Well, if you're working with an athlete, you know, what is the thought process of that athlete that your athlete wants to model, right? You know, if you don't know, you can look it up. You can speculate on what you think it would be that would get that person to the next level, right? And so that's what we can do, and that's what I hope to do. So. So anyway, I just wanted to do a quick one, get back in the groove of the NLP members thing that we're going to be doing. Again, on Facebook Live, if you like this, click like and share, pass it around. If you don't like it, keep it to yourself. It's also being recorded for internal use. And my email group will get another copy of it and that they can use. So let's have some fun with this. And you know, again, if you have any questions, send in your questions. Right before I went on this trip, this few week trip, I also tore my Achilles tendon, so it kind of put me out for a while. It's still, I'm still hobbling. I didn't have the surgery, but it's a tough injury. But I'm using the NLP, the hypnosis, the epigenetic kind of thinking, and, you know, I'm about a month ahead of schedule. Now I got to not screw it up. But anyway, let's have some fun with, but if you have what I was doing before I left, and then I'll wrap this up, is people were sending in questions on marketing and on business building and on and technical stuff like working with clients. So I've been away for a few weeks, so I haven't really been keeping up with it. So if you have any questions or comments, please like just leave them on the Facebook Live or email me if you're on my email list. And, you know, I'll do them in the next NFNLP forum, which will be a lot of fun. And again, I just did the spotlight. I used we were interviewing wonderful Erica Flint from Bellingham, Washington, Cascade Hypnosis. I'm working on getting, you know, Albert Bramante from New York City, the agent who's also a hypnotist and NLPer, and a few other people are going to get up here. Maybe Bruce Sked from the Chicagoland area. A couple of the other people that I've known over the years, want to get them on, interview them, talk about their experiences and all of that. That's always good for people to know. So anyway, everyone have some fun with this. If you have any questions, just leave them on Facebook Live or email me. I'm pointing two different cameras. I'm doing a multi-camera shoot. So everybody have fun, and I'll see you soon. All right. So that was, I just finished the Facebook Live for my this group. Again, review that study. It was the, you can Google it. And it's something you can tell your clients about, especially if you're doing elite or a peak performance kind of training. It's a great study because it also shows that the mental side of it, right? And none of these NLP guys that did the study, Tony Robbins was involved, but it was Wyatt Woodsmall. I think it was Grinder. I don't know if Bandler was in that one, you know, and some of the other people that were involved, they weren't like military type pistol shooters, right? So they were working on the mental side. Okay. And again, you don't have to be really good at the skill yourself to teach the mental side of it. Okay. In fact, some people would argue, some psychologists argue, if it's a skill you're good at, you may not be the best coach because you're going to have your own pre-ideas on what it might be. Because that's where I always see these elite athletes where people say they ought to become a coach. And I just heard one of them who retired from pro football. There's Peyton Manning, because everybody said, you'd be a great coach. And he just kind of said, I wouldn't have the patience for someone that didn't want to, you know, be in the film room at 5:30 in the morning and stay till midnight. And he goes, I just wouldn't have the patience, right? And so, you know, he's a great player, may or may not be a good coach, right? Some of your good coaches weren't that great of players. So it's a different skill set. Everything is about the skill set. So I'll see you all as we trudge the road to destiny. Keep in touch, and I'll talk to you soon.